Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a weekly podcast to keep you up to date on what's new on our cloud platform, Microsoft Azure. Your hosts, Cynthia Crane, Evan Basilik, Sujit DeMello, Kendall Roden, Kel Teeter, and Russell Young discuss a different service or solution on each show, with subject matter experts to explain how to get started, how different services work, and how to make decisions in tricky scenarios. You can find out more about our podcast at azpodcast.com or follow us on Twitter at Azure Podcast.
Well, welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 306, being recorded on the 27th of November, 2019, with special guest Jeff Kasma. I'm Sujit, and on Teams with me, I have Russell, Kendall, Cynthia, Kale, and of course, our special guest Jeff, who we'll get to in just a minute. But before that, let's get a quick update on the news. What's been going on this past week in the Azure space? I know, Russell, you put a bunch of things in there. Do you want to get started?
Yeah, one that really caught my eye, actually, was this thing about Azure Farm Beats that was announced back at Ignite. I don't know if you've heard of this, but it's what we call a solution accelerator. And it's all about trying to get more insight, in this instance, for the farming industry. So it's a whole set of stuff that you can pretty much get up and running fairly quickly. It'll provision all the infrastructure and the services and the software that you need to run in Azure for you. But it will give you loads of insights about your farms by doing things like analyzing satellite pictures, or if you've got drones and you can take photographs, it'll pick up from that, or sensors. It does things like advise you how many sensors you need to put in your soil around to get all those nice bits of information to increase your yield or improve how your farm works. And I thought that was really interesting. It's kind of like this is democratizing intelligence and data that can be gathered, from farms all around the country, around the world, to try and help agriculture generally.
And this is all surrounding the IoT solution that we have? Is that how it is?
Yep. So it's all sorts of things put together. So the solution accelerator just, hooks all those things, does all the integration for you and pulls it all together into a nice portal.
Very nice. What else do you got there?
GitHub. So there's a lot of stuff going on with GitHub at the moment. And GitHub Actions was released recently, which lets you basically extend the functionality of GitHub. So if somebody does a pull request or something's been checked in, you can then trigger your own automated workflow that comes off the back of that. And what we've announced here that's gone generally available now is GitHub Actions for Azure. So in there are some pre-built actions that will allow you to do things easily, like deploy your application code into app services, for example, or something like that. So it makes that connection between GitHub and your Azure subscription, where you're going to host and run and deploy your apps, a lot more simple for you.
Yeah, the other thing that does, Kale, I noticed just recently is so GitHub does scans, right, to check if things like NPM packages are out of date or there's a security vulnerability. And you can use GitHub Actions now, it'll automate, create the pull request for you. So it's pretty cool. It completes the whole flow. It'll say, hey, you have a security problem here. Basically, you need to bump your version on this package. I'll create a pull request for it, and then you can test it, and this little thing will take care of that. It's pretty cool.
It's great for keeping on top of vulnerabilities and stuff that have been patched. Yeah, good one.
Does GitHub Actions work alongside Azure DevOps, or do they kind of serve the same purposes?
They do similar things in different ways.
Okay.
And the last one for me was Azure Cost Management for partners. So we've had cost management in place for quite some time now that allows you to set budgets and get a nice view on, where your spend is. But now they've just released the ability for you to do that as a partner, looking at all the customer subscriptions that you've provisioned. So if you're using CSP and you've migrated your customers through the Microsoft Customer Agreement, then you can use this portal to go and get a really good insight as to what those customer invoices look like on a per customer basis, where that spend is going, and again, do things like budget control and optimization on the spend. So that's quite a nice little feature.
Yeah, that must be huge in your area, right, Russell? I believe you work a lot with partners.
Yeah. I shouldn't call it a little feature. I'm sure the product group has spent a long time working on that. I didn't want to belittle it because it's great. And yeah, like I say, very important for our partners.
Yep. Cool. Cynthia, you had something in there for Azure Migrate?
I did. And actually, I put in the Azure Dev Test Lab for last week. but we didn't get to do, well, I didn't get to join last week. There is now the ability to use managed identities to deploy lab environments in Azure DevTest Labs. So what that means is that now you're able to extend your identity across Azure resources where your credentials might not be able to access, for instance, like key vaults, image galleries, and networks. Now you're able to use a managed identity instead of your own credentials or the admin credentials you set up for a lab environment. That is what I used to use, which is probably not the best thing. But now that is available.
Highly recommend managed credentials.
Yes. And it also like lives with the lifecycle of the resource. Yes. So I think that's the other benefit of it existing and dying with your resource as opposed to one identity just lying out there.
And also the life cycle for customers is excellent with them, right? So if you're using like secrets, you have to manage the life cycle of those for apps or services. When you're using managed identity, it's sort of self-contained. So I see customers moving in that direction from having to manage individual secrets.
Definitely.
And feeling just an identity guy.
Yeah.
And then the other one I put in was for Azure Migrate. So something you would usually do before you're deciding to migrate one of your servers to Azure is to do an assessment. And before this preview announcement came out, you actually have to install an appliance or an agent on the server you're hoping to move. But now that restriction has been removed, you just need to import a CSV with your metadata on your server instead of having to install the actual appliance, where some companies might run into security issues where they don't want to install anything on their on-prem servers, or there's problems with deploying the appliance. Now you're able to just import a CSV of your metadata and it will run the assessment as if the appliance is installed.
That's cool. Very nice. Let's see what else. I know there's one item that was probably, again, Evan, I think, put this in, or somebody put this in last week about the monitoring of Kubernetes clusters. We've had this solution for AKS in the past where you could, and it is, you know, they've expanded, they've got it better. So now AKS is treated as a first-hand citizen for monitoring purposes. You can drill down into the clusters, into the controllers, into the pods, and so on and so forth, you know, exactly like you would expect in an AKS cluster, and get a view where your resources are being consumed. So that's been there for a while, but now they've expanded that same feature for container monitoring to ACI. Or if you, say, install your own Kubernetes cluster in your own environment or in Azure Stack, for example, or if you use Azure Red Hat OpenShift. And so irrespective of where Kubernetes is installed now, you could still get that same in-depth view about where your Kubernetes resources are being spent. And so that's a new feature that they announced this week.
I had one more, Sajid, actually. So I've been a big fan of the Cosmos DB change feed. And essentially what change feed allows you to do is basically kind of an ordered read-only log of all of the creation and modification and things that are taking place in your Cosmos DB instance. But now that's actually extended and they're supporting blob storage and preview. So I think that's pretty neat because it really allows for that event-driven type of architecture where you can basically have application change feed and process these events that are happening on your data. So I think that it's going to be really valuable that that's now supported. So I'm excited to see customers kind of lean into that and see how they can use that in a more cloud native as a cloud native way to kind of process some of the changes happening to their data and blob storage.
That is actually great information. I know that's been an ask for a while, trying to capture changes in blob storage. So this is going to be very interesting. Thank you.
Yeah, and to qualify that a little bit, if you are interested, you do have to apply for the preview. So it's not something that's just like readily available right now. You would have to opt in, but definitely worth looking into.
Awesome. Well, I think that's a good roundup on the latest news in the Azure space. Why don't we get to our special guest, Jeff? Jeff, thank you so much for joining us today. Please go ahead and introduce yourself to our listeners. Tell us what you do, what you're passionate about in the Azure space, and we can take it from there.
Great. Thanks for having me on the podcast. So I'm Jeff Kasmer. I'm a senior program manager in our identity engineering team. So we're actually focused on our customer experience. So I work with our customers to kind of strategically understand our identity platforms and help them deploy them with strategic guidance or any challenges they may have, bring some of those insights and feedbacks back into the product itself. So we work directly with those customers as partners to help us improve the product as well as improve their business.
So when I think of identity in Azure, the first thing that comes to mind to me is Azure Active Directory or something like that. Help me understand, like, you know, where in that world you guys work.
Sure. So Azure Active Directory is the core identity platform for all of Azure, as well as our O365 services. So when you're accessing, say, your Exchange Mail, Exchange Online Mail, Teams, you're actually using an Azure AD account. And the same is true as when you're accessing like the Azure portal and you're managing those resources, you're using that with an identity that Azure AD has provided. So all of that access control, authentication, authorization can be managed there.
So I'm going to put you on the hot seat here. There has been a couple incidents around AD that have happened in the past couple months. What is your advice for customers or people in general that are using Azure AD? Like, how do you build resilience around that? How do you make sure that it is rock solid as to the extent as much as it could be possible?
Sure. So yes, there have been some impairments over the recent months. But first, what I want us to talk about, though, is really where is the focus on those impairments? So when a customer is securing their Azure AD resources, right, we typically recommend that they enable MFA. And what's surprising to us is that 92% of tenants do not require MFA for admin. So this means that it is only a username and a password that is protecting their organization's access. And again, that's Azure resources, O365, third-party SaaS application. So in this scenario where we had some impairments to say the MFA service, customers were asking, well, how would I be resilient if I'm requiring MFA? And our answer is that MFA is a control, right? We recommend having layered controls, meaning that you can use things like conditional access policies that say, I require MFA to access these resources. But I also have other controls like, say, hybrid Azure domain join, the device identity, which can be a control, or things like identity protection, risk-based controls. So by utilizing several controls in a layered effect, if you have an impairment of one control, you could still maintain secure access to those resources. And you may say, if there's an impairment, I'm going to have a policy, sort of like a contingency policy that says, if there's an impairment in one control, I'm only going to allow access to these specific resources with this other control while that is impaired. And then when it's no longer impaired, enable your existing access before. So you're pre-planning for a potential outage and having a way to mitigate that without affecting the business.
So Jeff, I'm going to be honest. So I've been studying for some of the Azure exams that I have to take. As like a Microsoft employee, obviously we sometimes have requirements to take exams. So
yep.
Some of this sounds really familiar to me recently, just because I'm studying for my exam. And one thing that I have found is that no matter how long you've been around, identity is a really complicated topic. And it's something that's very, like, I would say, even though we have certain precedences that have been set, we have Azure AD, we have these things that are pretty solid, things are evolving a lot. Like, there's the securing of things with Azure Key Vault, and then there's the concept of managed service identity, which maybe is now managed identity. And like you said, there's kind of this, like, privileged access control, and there's conditional access. How do I educate myself? Like, how do I understand the baseline? And how do I, as someone who maybe isn't from the identity space per se, try to differentiate between, like, the difference between what the application's onus is versus, like, a user, how they authenticate? Do you just have any guidance on that? Because I assume user experience, you might have some, so help me out.
Yes. Yeah, no problem. Identity has always been there in some form of IT, right? But it has become increasingly more important, right, in a modern cloud-based model, right? Our view is that identity is a new control plane, meaning it's no longer just firewalls. It's no longer just, systems access. The identity is what we use across systems, across devices, across networks, right? But you're right. How do you understand the core tenets of identity and how it applies in this modern cloud. So typically we do publish documentation on our Microsoft Docs, but we also put a lot of care and feeding into articles on our Azure AD blog, because we know that customers have that same questions of, here are features, how do they map to our business scenarios? And my team periodically does go there, and we do publish content to help to guide customers and people who are interested in learning our identity platform to understand it better. And I think we're also looking at expanding some of our knowledge sharing or on the Microsoft Learn platform. Something we've been talking about is try to look at the scenarios that most customers are asking about, and let's try to develop content to help guide them.
Yeah, I would say one of the questions just recently that I've gotten or a discussion that I've had with customers is would you say that managed identity really is kind of the next wave of how we should be recommending for customers to authenticate between services running in Azure from one to another? Because I know that, like, for example, in Key Vault, you can just pass in the secrets to be able to access your Key Vault instance and then maybe be able to get access to other things. But it seems like kind of this concept of managed identity is really maybe the more secure or better path. Can you speak to that at all?
Yeah. I would agree. So if you're hosting your resources on Azure, managed identity makes a lot of sense. Again, you're abstracting the security credentials from the instance of the application. You're not having to give a secure password or certificate to a developer to install on that instance. They have to manage that. And when that secret expires, right, you don't have to go and change it. So you have it centrally controlled in that resource. So when that resource is provisioned, you can create a managed identity. It can use it for the lifetime of that resource. And when that's deprovisioned, that identity is no longer lingering around. So yes, definitely, if you are deploying on Azure, it's something you should definitely look into.
Hey, Jeff, I had a question. This is Kale. Years ago, and I'm talking way back, probably like 2003, 2004, we had products to do automation around identity, which essentially would integrate with existing enterprise systems such as PeopleSoft or some other yes. HR system that exists. And based on some workflow that we could actually code in there, that we would automatically either provision, deprovision, do all kinds of things. I'm wondering how that's evolved over the years. I know we had DirSync and we had all these things as Azure AD came along, but has that evolved or has that kind of disappeared, or how has that happened?
Perfect. So I have a long background on deploying identity solutions with MIM or FIM in those scenarios. So I could definitely speak on those. Today, we have kind of our what we call our bridge or hybrid model, where we're taking an on-prem AD and we're provisioning it to an Azure AD. And this is what we typically may have seen as DirSync before, most recently as Azure AD Connect. And then we just announced at Ignite our new cloud AD provisioning or cloud sync. So now we actually can do synchronization from AD to Azure AD just by deploying an agent on-prem and managing and controlling that flow from the cloud itself. So this is going to be entering public preview shortly, but we did announce at Ignite. But then we're talking about managing the identity and maybe the entitlements around those identities. We do support MIM today. So MIM is a Microsoft Identity Manager, is a common product that's deployed for complex on-prem solutions. But now in Azure AD, we support entitlement management, right? Meaning that it's a feature that also went GA at Ignite, where you can say, this user exists in my tenant or an external user. I want to create a package and either assign them access or they can request access to that resource. So now we can govern by granting the access, and we can also remove the access when it's no longer appropriate. So now we're seeing this provisioning moving to the cloud, centrally managed. And now we're looking at being able to provision apps that are in the cloud and on-prem as well in the future.
Super cool. Yeah, thanks for that.
So you mentioned the MFA thing, which is something that customers should enable. What are some of the other, I would say, low-hanging fruit that customers should think about when they're introducing Azure AD into their organizations?
Perfect. So first off, I want to say that sometimes there's a little confusion of where Azure AD fits. Some customers say, hey, I don't have Azure AD, but I have Office 365. And as I said earlier, the identity provider for Office 365 is Azure AD. So if you have an Azure subscription, you have Office 365, you have Azure AD. But now, how are you using it, right? So in the case of MFA, right, we recommend requiring MFA for admins. And we actually made it easier recently by enabling security defaults. So now in your tenant, you can actually go in there and say, I want to enable security defaults. And we're going to enable the policies to require MFA for admins, MFA for managing Azure resources, MFA for users who have elevated risks. And one of the key things, a low-hanging fruit, is blocking of legacy authentication. So are we familiar with legacy authentication?
Let's remind our listeners what it is all about.
No problem. So typically when I talk about legacy authentication, I like to call it credential sharing, because it's the model where I give my credentials to a service. Maybe it's Exchange Online, maybe it's some other provider, and that provider passes those credentials to the authority, in this case, Azure AD. This is not a really secure pattern, because now I'm giving my credentials to somebody other than the authority. And we see a lot of the credential attacks are trying to come over legacy authentication. So most organizations have moved to modern authentication or token-based authentication. So we are recommending that these organizations start blocking legacy authentication, which can be done by disabling App as Service, Exchange, SharePoint, and Skype, and also by conditional access. So if you have conditional access, you can block legacy authentication. And if you have, you don't have conditional access in your tenant, you have security defaults, which you can enable to do so.
That's a good one. Yep.
Jeff, so for people that, for customers that still have on-prem AD infrastructure, what is the common way of moving from like on-prem to hybrid to all in the cloud? And what does that process look like? And what are some things to consider during that process?
Sure. So AD on-prem, I think, is going to be around for quite a while. Although I do have customers who are saying, hey, what does all in the cloud look like for identity? So that discussion is happening. But what's important is the resources, the applications that the business uses. If those applications are integrated into an on-prem environment, AD, whether it's LDAP, Kerberos, MTLM, start looking at how you want to move into a modern authentication using like federation protocols, SAML, OAuth, OIDC. So a lot of organizations are now evaluating their app catalogs, their service catalogs, and looking at how do I integrate them into Azure AD so I don't have to have it in the on-prem AD. So today, Azure AD can pretty much integrate almost any application, right? So whether it's a federation protocol, we have a feature called Azure AD Domain Services for like LDAP and Kerberos. And then we also have other features like Azure AD App Proxy, which gives secure access to those on-prem apps. So customers are starting to look at looking at their resources, coming up with their integration platforms of how do they integrate into Azure AD now.
What do you see coming down the pipe with Azure AD? Like, what are some of the new things that we can publicly talk about?
So some of the things at Ignite we mentioned, right? So we had our Cloud Sync. I think this is going to be a very useful for our customers who have distributed organizations, meaning that they may have a merger, an acquisition, where they don't have network connectivity, but they want to bring them into the central Azure AD. Typically, these kind of events happen in a very small amount of time. So with the Cloud Sync model, you'll be able to deploy that agent and bring them into that core Azure AD. One of the other features that I really liked was our conditional access report only mode. So now with conditional access, you can define the process or define the policy. You can apply it in report only mode. And now you can monitor what access requests would have been in scope of that. And this is actually really helpful for organizations who are saying, hey, I want to block legacy authentication, but I don't know where it's being used. They can use the report only mode to report on where it would have been blocked. And then they can constrain those users who may have a legitimate reason for using legacy auth and work on remediating those without impacting the business. So I think it's a great feature.
Yeah, along with that, so some users maybe, because there's such a plethora of options, I'll say, with Azure AD and features that they can enable. I know one of the things we have in Azure All Up is like kind of these recommendations, right? So we can kind of on the fly be getting feedback saying, hey, by the way, your VM's not totally secure or it's not totally resilient. You should do this. Is any of that bleeding into the identity space? And will that help customers like enable features that they may have forgot about or should be enabling?
Great question. So one of the features we have is the Azure AD Identity Score. So actually what this allows you to do is look at your Azure AD tenant and look and see the features that would contribute to a more secure tenant, right? So we can say, well, you know what, you're not blocking legacy authentication. And if you did, this would increase your score by this percentage or this amount. And organizations can compare their identity score with their industry verticals, right? So a financial organization may want to compare their score with other financial organizations in that vertical. So this gives an organization sort of a prescriptive guidance of things that contribute to making their environment more secure, and then come up with that action plan of how they're actually going to implement them.
That's really cool. And does that include MFA as well, those recommendations?
Of course, yeah, yes. Okay.
Yeah. So just to circle back on the MFA, why do you think customers aren't turning it on? Is there a charge to it? Is there a cost? What's stopping them?
Yep, good question. So I think for some organizations, they're moving to the cloud and they're not maybe being aware of things that they want to secure. Some mindset is in the model of the intranet is what I manage. Everything out of the intranet is really not really something I manage. And thinking about putting MFA on those resources is critical because that's the only control you're going to have initially, right? You don't have the network layer like your traditional intranet environment. Enabling MFA allows you to not just have that username and password, which may have been reused over many other services. So they may not be aware that they should do it. And that's where Secure Score is hopefully making them aware of things that they should be doing. But also, we did announce with the new security defaults that was at Ignite that MFA is essentially in a free scenario for users or organizations, which are in the free tier of Azure AD. So for those who are not familiar, we have different tiers, a free, a premium one, and a premium two. So premium one had the MFA features before, but now we're bringing those into that free tier with the security default.
Great.
And the score that you're talking about, is that who developed that score? Is that related to the CIS score or index?
So this comes back from our observations with customers and recommendations on the platform, right? So looking at based upon maybe attacks we've seen and the controls we have in place, how they would mitigate them. So we look at what an action is and then what the user impact is at implementation cost, right? So user impact may be low, implementation cost might be moderate, and we kind of give a scoring number to that. So if you were to go in this direction and enable this, here's the user impact, it may take time, but you'll see the benefit to the score based upon what that control is. So it's working with us as an organization, our customers, and our general security organization on things that would better secure their environment.
Got it. Oh, this has been great, Jeff. Thanks so much for all the info there. Any more questions for Jeff before we let him go?
Jeff, so for people that are thinking from an on-prem environment where they're thinking about privileged access workstations or they're thinking about securing lateral account movements, how does that translate into the Azure AD world, or do they not exist anymore?
So in Azure AD, the things that we look for are privileged or over-privileging, right? We see a lot of organizations which may give the global admin functions in the organization they feel they need it. And recently, we've really announced the expansion of additional roles for tasks and the ability now to create custom roles for Azure AD. Now, utilizing those segmentation or that distributed model, right, we recommend using our PIM or Privileged Identity Manager feature for doing what we call eligible roles, meaning I can say this user is eligible to be global admin, but they do not have it full time. They do not have it at rest. When they want to go and use that role to do a task, they actually have to request to elevate. They may get reviewed, approved, and then they have that role for a small period of time, so maybe 3 hours or whatever that policy is. When they complete the task, the role is removed and the access at rest isn't there. So you don't have so much of that. I can compromise accounts that have access and then elevate it from there. So it is a little different than the on-prem lateral traversal model, but we want to manage the access at rest in the cloud model.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Well, Jeff, if you have any links or any information you want us to share with our listeners, please send them over to me, and I'll be happy to put them along with the recording for this particular episode. Again, thank you so much for taking time today to talk to us about identity solutions in Azure, and we look forward to having you again in the future.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any thoughts, questions, or just want to connect, find us on Twitter at Azure Podcast. Background music has been taken from ccmixer.org under the Creative Commons license. We hope you'll tune in again soon to keep learning with us.